Good afternoon, Muskegon. Oh, it's so great to be back here in the studio with my good buddy working the board. We got listen, you're going to have it's going to be premium sound on today's show. only because in preparation. Now, look, ladies and gentlemen, you know how professional the men and women who work here at 103.7 at the Maze and Wright studio are when it comes to audio and visual mechanics. I mean, they are so proficient that you get, I mean, I wish I could say this is HD, but I'd probably be talking out of the side of my mouth if I said that. But the good news is you can hear us.
You can hear us finally.
And it's, you know what's really cool? I don't know. I mean, this is a crazy concept. So sit down. If you're standing up, sit down. Because, you know, they make these crazy little knobs. And they have had these knobs on transistor radios for decades.
Decades.
I dare say centuries, but I don't think radio's been around for a century. Maybe, no. maybe close to the old tube transistors. I'm not so sure. But even the old tube transistors had little knobs called volume. And when you turn the down to zero, you get nothing.
You get nothing at all.
You get nothing. In fact, in testing for today's program, we learned that concept because when we turned it on, we got nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. And thankfully, I mean, you know, again, professionals that are here at 103.7 The Beat. In particular, I got to give a shout out to Q. First and foremost, he's pretty good when it comes to DJing events. Just FYI, if you've got an event coming up, you need somebody to play some tunes, Q's your guy. But he's also very good at, and I didn't realize this, remoting in. I mean, that I, for the first time, and I've been doing this for a few years, for the first time ever, I watched Q remote in. It sounded like he was driving. I hope he wasn't, because you're really not supposed to drive and do that at the
and
same
time. And remote in.
And remote in at the same time. That's usually a no-go. That causes, you know, people to get a little antsy if you're not, you know, if you don't have your eyes focused on the road. But thankfully, I mean, with all the computer stuff that was going on, this, again, is going to shock you. The reason why it wasn't working was the volume was turned all the way down to zero.
The main volume.
Oh, I'm sorry, the main volume. If you are not versed in the area of electronic, in particular, you know, I always get intimidated every time I walk into the studio and I see this big board in front of Rob. I mean, it's got all sorts of buttons and knobs, and you got to turn this and, you know, press that. I'd be afraid that it would blow up. And really, the only button that you need to be aware of is what's called the master volume.
Yes.
So if you think about the title, master volume. Yeah, controls everything. Master control everything. And if that's at zero, you got nothing.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter how much you play with the microphone the knobs.
Making sure stuff, cords are
plugged in. No, man.
The mic volumes are up.
Yeah. If you've got the master volume down at zero, that's what you're going to get, zero. So thankfully, given remoting and FaceTime, you get to hear us.
Yeah.
I mean, I know
Q
you
figured it all out.
Q figured it all out, and I'm sure he's probably cursing under his breath right now.
No, let me tell you what he's actually doing. He's probably rolling on the ground laughing at me. Like, Rob, you know this stuff. Why am I remoting in?
Yeah.
And telling you it's something simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he checked all the other stuff, and he said it's something simple.
Well, look, you know, it just like school, just starting. I mean, I can't really say you just started. You've been doing this for a while.
No, you can't help me there.
Yeah, it looks like a relatively newer board, so maybe the buttons are a little bit different than the other one. But not. Listen, here's the good news: is today I learned something, so now I know.
Now I know. You and me both.
That if in fact we come in and we don't see things looking like they're recording, or that we don't see like the noise that we're speaking into the microphone is being picked up on the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where to look to.
The master volume.
Master volume. Yep. They even make it a pretty red color so that it you know, they say that red and fluorescent green, you know, are very, I won't say attractive to the eye, but it's supposed to, you know, really bring your senses to attention. I mean, that's why, you know, people say, why don't drive a red sports car? Because it draws a lot of attention. And you'll see people walking or on motorcycles with those fluorescent. I've even seen now the fluorescent sort of fog lights on motorcycles.
Really?
So they have the daytime runners, but then they'll have the green fluorescents as well, which is a good idea. I mean, you know. Sometimes motorcycles are hard to see, and so the more that you protect yourself, the better. Again, a good lesson is still got some warm days still ahead. Keep your eyes and ears open for motorcycles.
If you can hear them. Because now they make them where they're quiet as a mouse.
I don't know why you would buy a motorcycle that's quiet. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I ride motorcycles.
I sort of have this thing that if you drive a sports car or you ride a motorcycle, I got to hear you coming.
Yeah.
I just got to hear it. I mean, if I don't.
I might not see you.
I might not see you, but I got to hear it. And if I don't hear it, then you need to visit a muffler shop, my friend.
I think, DJ, and maybe you can clear this up.
Yeah.
I think people be worried about the decibels or the noise level.
I suppose
if you can get a ticket.
Well, look, okay, there is responsible revving. Mm-hmm. And then there's irresponsible revving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the responsible revving is, you know, you will accelerate from a stoplight, from a stop sign, you know, from an intersection maybe, or as you're coming from, a city street onto a highway, it is required that you accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
So that increase in decibels, I say, is fair game. It's the, you know, in the middle of the neighborhood street, nobody around. I might just give this little bad boy a little jump and see how fast we can get to 60 between this intersection and that intersection.
The next one.
That's a problem. Yep, that'll create problems for you, and may end up leading to a pullover and some questioning.
All right.
Maybe even a ticket.
Where are you going, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that the drag race started at midnight tonight. I didn't understand that. Yeah, so, but anyways, the good news is that we are up, running, and rolling.
We are on the way.
On the way. So that was a fun little opening. Let's get down to some seriousness here.
Yes, sir.
As I'm sure many of you are well aware.
Yes.
Over the last few weeks, we've had a little bit of an issue in Muskegon, and in particular in our two urban areas, Muskegon Heights and the city of Muskegon. And you know, certainly, you know, what's interesting is PA actually called me. It was over Labor Day weekend when Mr. Piggy was unfortunately gunned down, and we had a conversation about that. And, you know, ultimately, I know that if you're calling me or PA's calling me, especially on the weekend, that there's something that I need to know, and I appreciate that very much. But you know, ultimately, we were able to, and again, you know, we had some folks who were willing to kind of tell the truth about what they saw and what happened, and you know, currently we've got a warrant out for the individual involved in that particular case. I was told yesterday, as a matter of fact, that there's an intent. There have been some attempts for this person to turn himself in, and I hope that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, and we can obviously let the court process start. But yeah, that was the first of a chain of events that happened over that weekend, and then spilled into this past weekend. And you know, I don't know if I wouldn't call it a silver lining, certainly. I wouldn't even call it a bright spot. But what's interesting for me is that the various cases that we're talking about or that have happened over here in the last, I'd say, couple weeks are relatively – they're all unrelated. Unrelated.
Oh, really?
In the sense that, you know, one wasn't as a result of another. And that to me, obviously, that's a bit concerning, only because, you know, we are you know, we're certainly on the tail end, really. In some respects, summer is almost over. I think technically it's another week or so that
you're right.
We're over. But for the most part, you know, school starts and summer's sort of technically over. And to have all this happen within this short period of time is frustrating. I know it's upsetting to the community, and it's certainly upsetting and frustrating for us in law enforcement and in the prosecutor's office, only because I thought we were really having a good year.
Yeah,
we were really having a good year, and you know, obviously we'll deal with these incidents and look to hold those accountable who have caused this. But you know, in the end of the day, we're still looking for information on a couple. And
can you specify which ones?
You know, I'm trying to think of where the very last one that happened on Sunday night, and I can't remember the location.
Right.
That one is obviously still under investigation. We could use some help on that one.
You can call 231-72-CRIME.
Yes, Silent Observer. Call the number. Website, mobile app, all different platforms in order to get us information. And again, as we've talked about many times, it's the information that we're interested in. I'm not worried at this point whether I've got somebody that's going to walk into the courtroom and testify. That isn't a concern right now. Right now, the issue is getting the information that we need. So that one we could use a little bit of assistance on. The other one. Actually happened prior to the other one that I really am focused in on. It happened prior to even Labor Day weekend, was the incident that happened involving those two kids, a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old. You know, one of the things that at least I've been told it seems to starting to cooperate a little bit, that, and whether this again is a silver lining or not remains to be seen, but it's my understanding that those two kids were actually not the target of anything. Mm-hmm. They happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm. And not that they were doing anything wrong. They were just walking from the corner store, essentially, and happened to be walking by a house that was the target of this person's or persons' anger. They just happened to be walking by at the wrong time. So that, again, doesn't make it any less serious.
No,
and certainly it really actually gears towards the very reckless, grossly negligent acts of these individuals who are firing from cars and not really paying attention to the surroundings when they do that. Not that firing into a house is justified in any sense of the
name. No.
But ultimately, we've already seen, and in the not too distant past, that bullets have no brains
or eyes.
They don't. You don't tell it. Oh, well, this is the place or the individual I'm targeting. It goes where the gun goes. And obviously, we saw the tragic ending of a 6-month-old child's life, and certainly these two children, again, doing nothing wrong but just walking from the corner store, you know, again, is another illustration of why, you know, we need to, as a community, continue increasing our efforts in promoting more peaceful means of resolving disputes and conflicts, first and foremost, but also making our young people recognize that whatever it is, whatever beef or whatever anger, whatever it is, whatever conflict is inside of you, using a weapon isn't the answer. It's not going to resolve that conflict, regardless of whether you hit somebody or not. Because ultimately, every time you do that, you are increasing your liability, if you will,
right?
Not only within the system itself, because trust me, when it comes to gun violence and gun crime, we're very, very serious about that. I really have taken a very aggressive, hard stance because I don't like to see the news reports. I don't like to, you know, talk to the victims' families who've lost a loved one because of this. That's not a fun part of my job. And I really think that Muskegon is trying to work its way to a community that we don't have to necessarily worry about stuff like this. And I, you know, we got some work to do, and we got a little bit of ways to go, but I do think even with what has happened over the last 2 weeks being done, that we are headed in a positive direction. And I will keep holding on to that optimism, because I really believe that. And it's the work of a lot of different organizations, a lot of different people, and certainly law enforcement is included in that group. And you know, we're going to continue to work on proactive ways. You know, we just about a month ago we were in here on that Safer Teens program, and yes, we're getting close to implementing that in the school system in a couple of different schools. And so I'm really hoping that we can start doing some very positive, proactive intervention with our young people who are struggling, you know, with whether it be a mental health situation or trauma and mental health. You know, there's a lot of different things these days that our young people are dealing with and struggling with, quite honestly. Yes. Yes. You know, and different than, you know, when you and I were
right
of that age, right? I mean, right, it's just a different world out there. And so we need to do our best to provide those tools for them to learn and use, so they can avoid putting themselves in positions where they end up being either a victim or, you know, making some poor choices and bad decisions.
Now, you brought up schools. I reflected back on the Georgia shooting that just recently happened.
Yeah.
Usually schools, churches, things like that were off limits. You know, even for the street guys.
Right.
You know, those were off limits. You know, along with women that did not live that life, or children.
Right.
Period.
Right.
A child, no. You know, nowadays it seems like it's a free for all. And I don't know if that's because all the old heads are locked up or what it is, you know, the reason why they're not getting it. But this wasn't a situation like that. The father, from what the information that they've released to the general public, was a body cam footage of the police talking to the father. And the father bought the son the gun. I assumed you had to be of age to even really possess a gun. Mm-hmm. That's what I assumed. But this is a show where you can set all these assumptions very straight. Because I remember as a kid going hunting with my grandfather, and he would give me a .22.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
you know, here, carry this gun, and,
yep,
you know, it's loaded, it's ready, don't point it at nobody, you know, da-da-da, wait, you know, all this kind of stuff. A child having or owning, can a child own a gun that's under the age of 18 or 21, whatever it is, in the state of Michigan?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Georgia.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the state of Michigan only.
It's from my memory, I believe you have to be at least 21 to own a firearm. And certainly
we're talking state of Michigan.
State of Michigan. But I do know, I mean, to the situation that you talked about.
Right, right.
You know, under a parent supervision of a parent or guardian.
Right.
Those circumstances are different, because obviously, I mean, that's true, you know, as we get close to deer hunting. In fact, you know,
right,
October 1st,
yeah,
you're going to see they have special youth hunt where,
yeah,
even though adults can only use, you know, the bows and arrows,
right,
youth are able to use rifles and shotguns, but under the they're not going out into the woods by themselves.
Right.
I mean, it's
right
under the supervision of an adult. So there are. Exceptions to the rule. But I do, from my memory, I believe It is 21.
21 to own a gun.
To
like,
own.
Like I said, it brought up the Georgia shooting, but, you know, for the state of Michigan, that's who our prosecutor represents, the state of Michigan and the laws contained within the state of Michigan. This is not Georgia. So I don't know what their laws say or what it does or whatever. It might be different. It's different from state to state. Basic same principles, but different from state to state. So that's why I was asking that question, to deal with the state of Michigan, the people that's out there listening. And that's what made that come up, because I know people are going deer hunting, you know, when the season opens. And I, you know, see, you know, hear talk of parents or fathers taking their son deer hunting with them, you know, when they're in the woods hunting and things of that nature. But don't they, or is there, are there programs to teach kids how to handle a rifle?
Yes.
A pistol, a gun? That's going to be my next question. Go get ready for that.
Yeah, so, yeah. This is really kind of goofy. To buy a gun from a federally licensed dealer, you have to be 21 or older. As well, you know, you can't apply or get a CPL, a concealed pistol license, unless you're 21 years of age or older. However, okay, you can possess a gun at 18, over 18. So it's a little goofy. But also, so ultimately, yeah, I mean, ultimately you can possess if you're 18 or older. You can't purchase unless you're 21 or older. You certainly can't, you won't be able to get a CPL or a concealed pistol license unless you're 21 years of age or older. And obviously the exception, is that you're under the direct supervision of an adult if you're under the age of 18. So there, you know, your hunting examples for
right.
So it's a little confusing, as it relates to purchasing or possessing. You know, you can't walk into a gun store under the age of 21 and purchase a gun.
Okay.
But if, you know, your father, grandfather, you know, has right. guns, you're allowed to possess a weapon if you are 18, if you're over the age of 18 or older, I should say.
Right.
Or if you're under the age of 18, as long as you're into the direct supervision of an adult, which according to the law is 18 years of age or older.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it is, like I said, it's a bit confusing, but certainly under the age of 18, you shouldn't be handling a weapon. Now, you can buy a long gun 18 years of age or older. You just can't buy a pistol. That'd be 21.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it like I said, it's a bit confusing. And this is state of Michigan.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you 18 or older, 21. So 18 or older for long guns, 21 or older for pistols. In the Georgia circumstance, you know, why you're purchasing a 14-year-old an AR-15 style weapon, I don't know. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Father said for hunting.
Yeah, for hunting, sure.
I don't know what you kill with AR-15.
That's an awful big
elephant.
That's an awful big deer.
Is it an elephant that you're shooting at or something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a great question. Great question.
It's all gonna come out in court.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think I haven't had a chance to really kind of follow up on that case, but I thought they had already issued charges against the dad.
Oh yeah, he's got some serious. Yeah. He's arrested in jail.
Yeah.
You know, for his son doing the things that he did.
Yeah.
You know, his son he's done.
Yeah.
And they have the death penalty.
Yeah.
From what I understand in Georgia.
Yeah.
So I don't know, because they're going to charge him as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I've been following it. They're going to charge him as an adult And I'm wondering if he will fall under that death penalty.
Well, yeah.
Because he was a juvenile.
Yeah, see, that'll be, I guess my quick answer to that is probably not. Only because in the back of my head, I seem to recall some U.S. Supreme Court cases that talk about cruel and unusual punishment for juveniles under the age of 18 and the death penalty.
So okay.
I would be surprised.
Now, the father could get the death penalty.
Well, I mean, it just depends on what they charge him with and whether they charge him with a capital offense. I mean, you know, that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
They were arraigned, though, both of them.
Yeah.
The father and
the son.
The son were both arraigned. Now, that gun safety, I don't know if it's a law or if it's an ordinance just in the state of Michigan. I know you can clarify that for me. To where the parents have to keep.
Safe storage?
Safe storage.
Yep.
That's the one.
Yep. Yep.
Now, I thought I heard them saying something about that in the state of Georgia. Was that a federal or was that just the state of Michigan?
It was a state of Michigan law. I mean, I guess it wouldn't surprise me if Georgia has something similar. The law that passed last February was in the state of Michigan.
And that's safe storage.
Yep, that's safe storage. So what that law essentially says is that if you have weapons or firearms in your house, and there's a reasonable possibility that there'll be minor children or minors in that house, whether they're your own or your daycare, whatever.
You know,
it's reasonably foreseeable that there'll be a minor kid in your house. You're required to make sure that firearm is secure, whether it be in a lockbox or in such a way, you know, you've got the trigger locks or I've seen the locks that kind of go through the barrel, so you got those locks, gun locks or trigger locks or a lockbox. It has to be, and obviously the violations, depending on what happens, increase with the circumstances. As you can imagine, if something happens that causes serious injury or death, those are going to be 10 and 15 year felonies. If it's just a matter of it's out and it shouldn't, those are your misdemeanor level offenses. So, it's been a long time coming for those. I know that our association has really worked hard to get those passed. We see it every once in a while out here. I know the east side of the state was having some problems with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guns being left on dressers and kids finding them and playing with them and shooting themselves or shooting somebody else. That was a real problem on the east side. And there wasn't really anything, you're kind of trying to fit a square or a round hole in a square peg or around whatever. The metaphor I'm trying to use, right?
Right.
For us as prosecutors, and this sort of loosened that up a little bit, gave us a little bit more, something more that was more fact specific to that particular circumstance.
And I was curious because I could have sworn I saw something or heard something where they said, safe storage law, and they sell various things for various weapons, right?
Yes.
You can get a whole big old safe
for
your rifles or shotguns.
Yep.
And you can get them gun locks you were speaking on. And we had a bunch of them here for free that you could come by. And people did come by and they took a bunch of them, to lock their guns up and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, typically most police jurisdictions will have free gun locks.
Mm-hmm.
Most will have that available, and every once in a while at events you'll see law enforcement agencies giving those out. The debate is always, I need to have my weapon at the ready in case somebody breaks into my house. Okay, I get that.
Right.
But the likelihood of that happening is probably far greater of a percentage than the likelihood of somebody, you know, grabbing that gun and not understanding how to use it, i.e. a kid, or it being stolen. And ultimately, those are the pros and cons that you have to weigh.
Right. And I looked it up. The father, Colin Gray, 54, is being charged with 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter.
Okay. Yep.
2 counts of second-degree murder.
Oh, okay.
And 8 counts of cruelty to children.
Okay.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation said Thursday when the agency announced his arrest.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so they ran the gamut. If you recall, in the Oxford shooting, the parents were charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Yes.
And convicted, I should say, charged and convicted. The appeal hasn't come out yet, so I'm interested to see what happens.
Do you think it will be an appeal?
Oh, for sure. I guarantee you they filed an appeal. There's no question that they did. And so in this particular case, in the Georgia case, they went one step beyond involuntary manslaughter to second-degree murder, which is interesting. I mean, I'd be curious to kind of read the Georgia statute to see, you know, if it's laid out similar to Michigan, where you have to, there are the biggest element that we have to prove in a case like that is the intent element, right? You know, mm-hmm. What was the person's intent at the time they committed the act? And there are 3 levels, and I only have to prove one of them. It's either it's an intent to kill, intent to do great bodily harm, or the person did an act where that the action was reasonably foreseeable to lead to either great bodily harm or death.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be if Georgia has a similar structure on its intent, mm-hmm. that would if I were a betting man, and mm-hmm. I'm not, but if I were, I would guess that third prong of malice, we call it, third prong of intent, would be what they would be looking at as far as their theory, i.e. you know. And I don't know what the mental health situation of this young man was.
Right.
Right. So that's a factor.
Right.
Because if that's an issue and the parents knew it was an issue and then you introduce a firearm to that, you know, you are potentially putting gasoline on an open flame.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even if there wasn't really a mental health issue, but let's say there was a school issue, that there was, whether it was a bullying situation or maybe, you know, there's a couple teachers that were in the parents' eyes treating their son too hard, or the kid's eyes, you know, too mean to him and not to others. Then you introduce a firearm into that situation. That's, again, am I doing an act that could reasonably lead to a situation where death or great bodily harm was the end result? Now, I mean, I'm sure nobody would think that their kid would take their gun and walk into school with it and start right. blasting away. No, I mean, as a parent, I mean, you know your kids. But in the same token, you know, if I knew that my son or daughter were dealing with some significant issues, whether it be mental health, school, or a combination, I certainly wouldn't run to the gun store and say, you know, I think what'll solve this is if we go out back and, you know, go shoot some trap, or, you know, go mm-hmm. shoot some targets, or let's go hunting. I don't know that that's the right answer to that either, only because, I mean, even if you take the school out of it, the fact that young people these days are, you know, taking their own lives, and a firearm is an easy way to do that, I would not want my son or daughter to have access to something like that if, in fact, they're dealing with some of those emotional issues, mental mm-hmm. health and emotional issues. Why provide the instrument?
Right.
You know, because you never know, things should be going great, and then there could be a trigger, and if you're not around, but the weapon is, you know, easy, you know, becomes in their minds an easy solution. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, these incidents, obviously very tragic, always start to spur these conversations. And I think they're good conversations. I was just trying to see on my phone, and I don't know if Georgia has safe storage laws. It sounds like they've been talking about it. And again, this is just something that
right.
adds to that conversation.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I think a lot of people get nervous about, well, you know, now they're going to want to take my guns away from me, and I'm a law-abiding citizen. And you know, look, I've been a licensed CPL holder for, well, since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And every year I shoot with the Sheriff's Department. You know, I qualify with them. And so I'm certainly a believer in the Second Amendment, not to the extent that I'm going to go start my own militia.
Not an extremist.
Not the extremist extent, yeah. but I appreciate what that means and what gun ownership is, because I am a gun owner. But in the same token, you know, my weapons are secure. I mean, there ain't nobody getting them but myself.
What about your wife?
Well, yeah, my wife. I mean, I guess that's why I don't piss her off too many times. She has the combination. She has the combination.
I can't see your wife.
Oh, gosh, no.
I can't. I'm just being honest. Yeah. That was just a joke. Yeah. Even handling the gun,
which is funny because, you know, she grew up, her dad, even to this day, is an avid hunter. I mean, avid hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got you want to talk about a gun safe. I mean, they might as well call it a gun bank, because that's what it looks like. She's grown up around that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that she's ever been hunting with her father,
mm-hmm.
But she's grown up around it. So it's not foreign to her. But in the same token, I mean, you know, there's no chance that I'm letting my weapon lay around, especially when my kids were young,
right,
where they would have access to it. I mean, just it ain't happening. It's just not happening.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in responsible gun ownership. And that's really what it boils down to.
Now, what happens, DJ, a person like your wife's mm-hmm. father in the state of Michigan? I ain't talking about nowhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the state of Michigan, what happens when that person passes?
Yeah.
In the state of Michigan, what is the process for those guns?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. I guess it really depends on how, you know, whether or not that person has a will drafted, you know, where you're in your own words dividing up property,
right?
And I think there are special accommodations for that when it comes to firearms. You know, estate sales are kind of the same thing. You know, you'll see these big estate sales, and if they're mm-hmm. selling weapons, you know, there's still a process where you have to fill out forms depending on what kind of weapon it is, and you have to register the weapon, all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's still a big process that goes with that. But as it relates from family to family member, I would think that even if you acquire some of these, now obviously there are certain weapons that you don't have, like you know, shotguns, rifles. Those are you don't have to go to the police department and register that with them. Handguns, you do. You know, you have to, wherever you live, you have to register your gun with the local police department. And if you don't have a local police department, that's the sheriff's department, the county sheriff. But long guns are not that. They're different in that respect. So the transferring of long guns is a little bit easier than the transferring of pistols.
But
now, if you were going to then say, hey, listen, I'm not a gun owner, but I've inherited all these weapons, and you're going to turn around and you're going to sell them, you would have to go through a process in order to do that legally. And the best way would just to be go to a federally licensed firearm dealer and basically, you know,
broker,
yeah, pawn it, whatever it is. I mean, and run it that way, because then you know that you're transferring it to somebody who's legally allowed then to turn around and sell the weapons as well. So, I mean, there are a lot of different ways to do it to avoid any, you know, potential consequences that you may not be aware of.
But the thing of it is, to me, you know, and I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but I'm used to being crazy. But it just seems like it's a lot to own a gun now. You know, and I don't know when they put this in. We want to know where every gun is. We're the police. We're the, and I'm playing the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
We're the police. We're the FBI. We're the ATF. And we need to know where every gun is in America and who owns it. Some people have a problem with that. And that is what I think some of the people have a problem with, you know.
Sure.
Why should I know if I'm an FBI, ATF, or police officer that DJ Hilson owns a gun?
Well,
the public don't know.
Yeah, well, the only reason why they know and should know is for a couple of reasons. Let's say your guns get misplaced or stolen, and then they pop up somewhere. Well, your name isn't on it, but that serial number. It is, and that serial number goes back to the last registered owner, so that I know that I ultimately, you know, in a perfect world, I get my gun back because they know, oh, we got to contact, you know, Johnny Smith because we've got his weapon. The other aspect of it is, you know, certainly from a law enforcement investigative thing, when we're dealing with either firearms themselves or even now fired cartridge casings or fired rounds, and all the databases that are surrounding all that. I mean, if we find a weapon that was used in a crime and we find out through the serial number that it was reported stolen, you know, whenever and reported by whom, and or, you know, it's not reported stolen, but we know who the last registered owner is, we go to that person and start asking some questions. Hey, you know, were you aware, you know, that your gun, even though it's supposed to be here, is now over here? Let's talk about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that it's necessarily Big Brother, you know, needing to know where all the guns are. But it's more so, it's no different than when you register your car, license your car, register your boat, register whatever. I mean,
that's the thing.
So now you're gonna tell me that you wait a second. Hey buddy, you're not going off the deep end here, are you? Okay.
They know everything about us, but we know little about them. If that makes sense, you know, I can't just, you know, a police officer can walk up to me. Well, I have to be committing a crime, being detained or whatever. I get that part, but it's like, well, let me see your ID. I don't know you. Well, I'm a police officer. I'm in a uniform with a badge and da 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 da. But if I, okay, where you live? Where do you live? You know where I live, but where do you live? Why can't I know where you live?
Well, I tell you what. Here's how you find out.
Uh-huh.
You go to the academy.
Uh-huh.
You get yourself a badge.
Uh-huh.
And then you pull them over.
Good idea. But most of the time, they just flash a badge. Hey, oh, okay, yeah, I was just dealing with a 1096 and a 187.
Listen, I want to say, ladies and gentlemen, I had no idea that this conversation was going this direction. I will say this, and we've said this many times before. The beauty of this show is that we come in with no agenda and no preparation.
None.
We just let the conversation go where it goes.
Where it's going.
And we are going to a different planet right now.
And DJ did warn me about going off the deep end.
No, bro. Listen. I mean, hey. You know, I'll say a movement, for lack of a better way to describe it. And, you know, in my career, we've run into folks of that movement a few times.
Really?
Yes. I mean, relatively recently, too. Where, you know, they are of this belief that the government doesn't own them, that they shouldn't they are basically their own country. I'm not subject
sovereign
to
sovereign citizen.
Thank you. I'm not subject to your licensing requirements. I'm not subject to your laws. And you know, they have been very unsuccessful in the courts.
Every time
they're unsuccessful. I mean, I've been I've been sued a few times for $70 billion, I think, was the last one, for, you know, violating whatever crazy use. They like to bring out the Uniform Commercial Code. And the only reason why you would want to look at the UCC is if you're in some sort of business law, you know, security.
Right.
It's secure transit. It's all the business code.
Right.
There's nothing criminal in that code. And that's where a lot of times you'll see, you know, they'll sue for violation of the UCC, this and that. And it's usually for, you know, 70 million, billion. I mean, it's interesting. But yeah, that, I mean, that, there is that mindset out there. It does exist. I think in some respects, you know, the folks that are in militias, which mm-hmm. are alive and well in certain parts of our country, including here in Michigan.
Oh yeah.
They are of the same view as well, that, they are, whether or not they believe they're the protectors of freedom, I don't know. I've never really spent time researching them, but ultimately, you know, you've got that, and you know, unfortunately or fortunately, that's not how our society works. We are a society of laws and rules, and the consequences if you don't follow the rules. I mean, that's just simple as it gets. I have never one thought, you know, I need to challenge X, Y, and Z authority. I thought, you know what, if I just, you know, try to make good sound decisions and good choices, you know, things will be all right. Now, thankfully, thus far, it's worked out, outside of maybe a speeding ticket or two in my lifetime,
mm-hmm.
where I've decided to go faster than the posted speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for the most part, you know, I like law and order and rules. I mean, I'm a big fan of it. I really think that is the society that I want to be a part of.
That's the key to a good society.
It,
law and order.
Law and order, baby. Law and order. Law now, and order.
Now, you brought up something, the sovereign citizens. I see a lot of that in courts, and they argue their point that they're a sovereign citizen. What does that mean?
I'll be honest with you, because I don't think they know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. All I know is that they believe that they are not
not subject to
the laws of the state of Michigan or the United States of America. And I've seen them also go back to, I'll have to go back and look at some of the stuff that we've gotten in the past, like the monarchy, the British monarchy, and something along those lines, where, you know, they, whether they're proper, I don't know, but they are an island unto their own, unto themselves. And again, they try to use some of the business code or UCC code to support their positions as to why I am not a human being subject under the government of the United States or whatever state, you know, state of Michigan.
Right.
I'm my own government, and therefore I create my own rules.
Even if you own an island. And they have some islands for sale in the state of Michigan in case anybody can afford one. But even if you're on your own island, you're still subject.
You're in the jurisdiction of somebody.
Right. To their laws. Yeah. There's certain things you just can't do.
Yeah.
Even on your own purchased island.
Yeah.
Because it's just some land in the middle of the water.
Yeah.
Just the way it goes.
Just like if I want to drive a car, I need to register it. I need to insure it. I have to have a valid driver's license. Those things are really non-negotiable. Saying that, well, I don't have to register it or get insurance because I'm not subject to your rules, that doesn't fly.
Well, in a sense, it does. I'm going to tell you why I think.
All right, you go.
And you tell me
nope,
from
you
wrong.
Go. Yes.
The president of the United States cannot drive a car on public streets. But they can drive a car on their own property. Interesting, ain't it?
Well, yeah, because they get driven all over the place.
That ain't why they say. They just said that the President of the United States cannot drive. They took Obama's driver's license, basically. That's what they said. He cannot drive on a public street.
That's weird. I'll have to look at. I'll have to do a little research on that because
yeah,
that
maybe the, that news reporter that reported that.
Hey, listen. I mean, I have no reason to doubt it. It's a little strange to me because, you know, at some point in time, although you know, I suppose. I mean, it's just like I don't think the governor drives.
Really?
Oh yeah, no, no, she doesn't drive. I mean, she's got you know a detail, police detail.
Oh yeah, I know that.
Drives her around. Yeah. You know, and flies with her, and I guarantee you that she's not driving. You know, when even when she's outside the state and they're traveling for whatever reason, I would be surprised if on vacation she drives.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah. Because the detail, the detail, you know, follows her wherever she goes. Similar to Secret Service, I mean, it's the same deal. Maybe on a smaller scale, but it's the same deal. So yeah, I mean, that would drive me crazy, man. I suppose in certain circumstances, being driven as opposed to driving has its benefits. But at some point in time, man, I want to get behind the wheel.
Right, you want to go on your own.
Yeah, I
want
to.
You know,
yeah.
Your wife needs something from the store. She don't want to ask the detail to go get it.
Yeah.
You go get it.
Yeah.
So that means you got to say, hey, I need to go to the convenience store.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, we got to send an advance team, which, you know, all that kind of stuff. It does make things a little odd and weird.
Well, yeah, what it boils down to is somebody goes, well, I'll go get it for you.
Yeah. And, but they were talking about how George Bush drives only. On his property.
Interesting.
Of his house. That's where it was. It stemmed from, and that's where the question stemmed from. That, and they were, you know, the person that was doing the interview was asking, why can't he drive?
Yeah.
He's the president. He was the president of the United States.
Right.
No, he can't drive on public streets. I was like, wow. You know, that makes no sense to me. But. It confirmed me with this reporter that was interviewing. They were doing a story, a documentary or something on George Bush. And it was like he has his own property that he can drive around on his own property, but he cannot drive on a public street.
Interesting. Well, here we go. All right.
You found it?
I found something here. It says... thanks to the Former Presidents Act, which became federal law in 1958, U.S. presidents get a few perks once their terms are over, a pension, health insurance, and lifetime protection from the Secret Service. That last one includes a driver, and that means no driving on the open road ever.
Told you. Ever. Did you hear that last?
Yeah.
Ever. So that means your license is not suspended or restricted. You just don't have one, period. Now, I wonder if that's do they have to carry an ID? Or does somebody look at them and say, you don't know who this person is? They were the president for 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it goes back to this idea that, it says, since JFK was assassinated, the Secret Service has been very, very strict when it comes to driving privileges. I mean, I could see as president that being the case, but they're
when you're done,
basically saying,
ever
you're never driving again unless ever. You're driving around your property,
on your own property.
That's crazy.
Now, does that car have to have insurance? Does it have to be registered? You know what I'm saying? It brings up all those questions. You know, you're on your own property. You tear something up, it's yours.
We have gone down a rabbit hole here.
Yes, but it's been fun. You taught me something. I taught you something. The governor don't drive. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, governor doesn't drive.
You know, that's just like somebody saying you drive. I wouldn't have believed that.
Yeah,
okay.
You've seen me
it.
Drive.
But
we only have a short period of time left. We got to talk football and in that vein.
We got another 2 or 3 minutes. We good.
Week one's in the books.
Yes. When does Green Bay play?
They played last Friday, and they played in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I don't know if you watched the game Friday night.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, played the Eagles.
Did they win?
They did not win. And the other scary part was last play of the game, Jordan Love took a hit and sprained his MCL, so he's out for a few weeks. Thankfully, it's not season-ending.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're coming into the season with some high hopes, and now, Now we're, you know, we'll see how these few weeks play out before he can get back on the field. But, yeah.
How's the quarterback?
Who? Jordan
Green
Love?
Bayes.
Well, I just told you, sprained his MCL.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Lions,
man.
You watched that game.
I watched the first half.
I fell asleep. I did too.
I mean, it took overtime. Yeah. It took overtime. I mean, they end up winning. I mean, which is good, and everybody seemed to look okay. So we'll see. I mean, you know, the NFC North could be interesting. Although, you know, the Bears fans are probably have mixed feelings because they won. That is only because they got a pick six and ran a punt back or something for a touchdown. That's 14 points. You take those away, they lose.
Right,
and their rookie quarterback did not throw a touchdown. So, I'm still on the fence with them. On the fence with the Vikings. I mean, I think it's going to be a toss up between the Lions and the Packers. We'll see. That first matchup between the two is going to be exciting.
What date?
That's a great question. I can't remember. I know that the Packers and Lions play each other on November 3rd. Mm-hmm. At Green Bay. I don't know if that's the first meeting or the second meeting.
Okay.
So for sure in November.
Right.
At Lambeau. But yeah, I mean, it's the North is, you know, could be up for grabs. We'll see as we get halfway through where the teams are at.
Yeah.
But it's good to have football back.
College.
College, man. Notre Dame. Michigan
sucks.
Michigan got that handed to them.
Yes.
Big time. Notre Dame lost a game they shouldn't have. Yeah.
You are the only reason why I watch Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, whoo, yeesh. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, new teams and the new alignments, so the Big Ten just got bigger, adding, you know, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington.
Yes.
That's going to be interesting to watch. The 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
Is going to be interesting, so that'll be fun. But yeah, Michigan could be in trouble this year. They could be in trouble.
They are. They're in trouble. They have to show me something over the next few games.
Yeah, so yeah.
They are in trouble.
The Big Ten schedule will be interesting to see how that all fares.
And some of those teams, like you were naming, coming into
Yeah, man, it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah,
it's going to be a dogfight. All right. Well, we don't want to make Q mad.
No, we definitely don't want to do that.
But hey, as always, great conversation. Even though we jumped into a couple rabbit holes, but that's okay. That's the beauty of this program.
Absolutely.
All right, Big
it's
Rob.
It's real.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
It's real. Big Rob, we'll see you soon. Muskegon, be safe. We'll see you in a couple weeks.